Coming up on this episode of DL Weekly, walls come down around Galaxy's Edge, pricing revealed for some of the items in Batuu.
The park's icon returns, an Under the Hill party to celebrate the Haunted Mansion. We talk Sleeping Beauty Castle and more. DL Weekly starts now.
Welcome to DL Weekly, a podcast about Walt's original Magic Kingdom, Disneyland. We cover the latest news and information from the resort, test our skills at trivia, and have a discussion about the parks every week. We invite you to send in your feedback and stories. Our contact information can be found at dlweekly.net. Now sit back, keep your hands and arms inside the podcast, and enjoy this week's show.
Hello and welcome to this episode of DL Weekly for the week of May 22nd, 2019. I'm Teg Bushman.
And I'm Teresa Urban. We'd like to send a shout out and a big thank you to all of our supporters on Patreon, including Sarah M. for joining us at the Park Hopper level. This support helps make DL Weekly possible. Our patrons get some pretty nice perks like access to our Discord chat, live shows, some DL Weekly swag, and more. If you would like to learn more, head on over to dlweekly.net/support.
Well, have you taken advantage of the free year of touring plans yet? Why not? It's as easy as contacting concierge to book your next Disney vacation. James and Mike would love to provide you with this excellent service, along with helping you plan a great Disney vacation at no additional cost to you. You already know you want to go to the park, so why not contact concierge and get the planning started? Remember that dining reservations start at the 90-day mark, and they can help you with those as well. So the earlier you get started, the better.
If you are going to the park soon and want to be wearing some DL Weekly swag, head on over to dlweekly.net/store to pick some up. We did just add one logo and one just print. I don't know what you want to call it. Anyways, but we did just add some new stuff there. One is the Star Wars Galaxy's Edge logo that is all over our social media right now. And then the other one is we did kind of a take on the classic Mouseketeer stylized shirt and made it into the weekly tier stylized shirt, so you can be your own DL weekly tier. But the other thing we did too is we have different sizes of logos available now too. So it was just big, large ones that I like to call kind of like billboard shirts because it takes up almost a whole shirt. We shrunk it down so that it's just a little thing up in the corner of the shirt now, too. So lots of options.
Yeah, apparently our listeners are now called DL Weekly Tiers.
They are.
So, well, let's get to the news. We know a land far, far away is coming up on us at hyper speed, but the removal of the walls keeping guests out of Batuu is just more proof that it will be here before we know it. The construction walls have been replaced by benches and cast members guarding the entrances until the land officially opens next week.
I can't believe that it's already upon us. It feels like we've been talking about this forever and ever and ever, and it was never going to come. It was just this thing in the distant future. But here we are. People are mentally lining up already. I don't think anybody's actually lining up since you have to have the reservations, of course, as we all know. But yeah, it's crazy that, I mean, we actually know somebody that's already experienced Galaxy's Edge. That's just mind boggling to me.
Yes, she was very lucky to be able to experience that. Yes. So if you want to know more about her experiences, in fact, some of you know her if you listen to the episode a few weeks ago, Chrysanthi Tan, who was on the show. If you go look her up on Twitter, she is answering people's questions because she was able to spend a few hours there on Monday night and thought it was mind-blowing. I do want to read one part of a message she sent to me about this because I think it's going to be exactly what all of us... And actually, I read this in your voice, Teresa, believe it or not. I said, so how was it? She said, I thought I was prepared. I was not prepared. It was just so good and just realistic. Yeah. So I'm very excited about that. Also, did you see, this is kind of related to this, did you see that the Disney, there was a person who like three or whatever years ago when they started building Galaxy's Edge, took a picture in front of the wall and said, I'm the first in line. And they actually showed up at her house and gave her like a special pass to be one of the first people in the land.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Too bad it's not us, right?
When you step into Oga's Cantina for a drink, you'll be able to purchase mugs themed to Endor or Porgs, according to guests and cast members that have experienced the land. The Endor mug is priced at $42, with the Porg mug coming in at $32. Note that these prices are subject to change between now and opening.
I like the idea that there are, you know, we're getting some information about more merchandise than they've even talked about. And they've mm-hmm. talked about so much. I thought we would have known all of it by now, but apparently not. And of course, you know, Endor, original trilogy.
Yeah.
Porgs, new
Very
trilogy.
Popular.
So I think that that's good. Obviously, you know, Endor's been in the lore and stuff for longer. So maybe that's the reason for the higher price. Or we don't have pictures of any of this.
Yeah, it sounds like from what rumors are saying, it sounds like these mugs are going to be very much like mugs that you get over at Trader Sam's.
Mm-hmm.
So very detailed and very unique.
Which I know as soon as you see them, you're going to be like, I need to have one of these.
I don't know. That's a pretty steep price point
for
a mug.
But I feel like you'll still have that feeling.
I want it,
you
but
may
I
not
won't
actually buy
do
it. Also, with the post that we have linked, there were some pictures of coasters. Somebody
yes.
snuck a coaster out of there.
I love those. I love them so much. I don't know why I'm excited about coasters,
well, the
but I am.
Lamplight Lounge coasters
those
are super
ones
cool.
Those are so cool. We actually had a listener went to the Lamplight Lounge way back when it first had opened and mailed us some of the coasters. They mm-hmm. are so cool.
They are very cool. Well, the pricing has been released on the new lightsabers that you can build when Savi's workshop opens in Batuu next week. The custom weapons of the Jedi or Sith will be $199.99 each plus tax. The price includes a carrying case. Disney has noted that the experience is subject to availability and reservations may be required. I was a little disappointed, but not that surprised with this pricing point.
Well, you know, we kind of talked about it in regards to, like, the wands that you get over at Universal Studios in the Wizarding
yeah.
World of Harry Potter. And I think it is pretty similar. However, these are very customizable, whereas the wands, you just kind of picked out what you wanted. It wasn't like you could build your own wand. So you are paying a little bit more to have that experience, plus to be able to make it how, you know, make it what you want it to be.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'm not surprised at this price point. For me, not being that big of a Star Wars fan, it, you know, that's too much for me. But we'll talk about other things that I don't think is too much because it's my passions and my
right.
excitement. But yeah, so this just isn't for me, but I could see how true diehard Star Wars fans would just be drooling over this opportunity. The photos, I mean, there's photos online. We'll link them in our show notes of the actual pieces that you can build your lightsaber with. And they're gorgeous. They look really, really well done. They do not look like the plastic chintzy things that you could
no.
get. I mean, even they look so much nicer than ones that I've seen at the parks now anyways
yeah.
that are kind of like the higher end ones. So they look great.
I feel like I know it's really pricey. I feel like it's going to be hard for me to justify the price, but I think I'm probably still going to buy one because I want to build my own one. I want to go through the whole process. You know, that was one of the cool things, like you said, in Wizarding World, where, you know, you can go and be part of, you know, the wand choosing ceremony kind of thing and, you know, figuring that just out, just like the movie. So why would you not want to build your own custom lightsaber? Because there's so many different variations. So I'm excited to build my own lightsaber because obviously it's going to be very rare for someone else to have the same combination that you have. In fact, in the summer edition of the Disney 23 magazine, they say that there are 122,880 possible finished lightsaber combinations if you were to utilize all of the parts found within Savvy's workshop.
Whoa. That's crazy.
Are you going to come and experience the building with me?
Well, I don't know because the reservations are required, and we'll kind of get into it with what we're going to talk about next with the Droid Depot, but it's limited space, so it might just be you and take one person, so James may want to go with
Oh, maybe. That. That's true, because he'll probably want to build one of his own.
If a lightsaber is too pricey or just not your thing, you can also build a custom droid over at the Droid Depot. The droids will start at $99 plus tax and come in the BB series or R series, like R2-D2. Various activation chips and personalities will be available for an additional charge. I don't know. So we talked about this before, and what I assumed building a droid would be like, would basically kind of be like building, I don't know, like a remote controlled car or something like that. This whole thing with personalities and activation chips and how you can like, what? How cool is that?
It is pretty cool. Now, I will say, I'm looking at the options they have here. So they've got some different ones for people that are versed in Star Wars. There are some that look like R2-D2. There's one that looks like a really blue version of R2-D2. And then there's one that looks like, you know, from A New Hope, the one that kind of blew up or whatever that Luke almost bought. Then there's, of course, the one that looks like BB-8. There's one that looks like a blue, like, First Order version, and a white and red and black First Order version. Mm-hmm. And then I just saw this one, and I think that if I had to choose, this is the one I would choose. They have a Rex one that you can build.
Yes, I'm sure he's going to be very popular.
Right, so there is all types of stuff. Although I am a little sad that, like, the personality chips and other accessories that you can buy for them is an additional charge.
Well, unless...
But it's only $99 compared to a lightsaber.
Maybe they come with one, and if you want it more specific, then you can buy different ones. I mean, I don't know. We'll find out more when the land actually opens. But one thing that I did think was interesting was that the experience area is limited to just the builder plus one guest. So this is why I was saying this about the lightsabers. So, and for the droids anyways, at least one person in the party must be 14 or older. So... kids have to go in with their parents to do this.
That makes sense.
And these, it looks like these custom droids are non-refundable, and they unfortunately are not also eligible for the annual pass holder or any other discounts.
Right. And I think I read that about the lightsabers too. Mm-hmm. I think it's one of those things that you build it, you buy it.
Yep.
And it's yours. So, and there's no discount.
Those of you that are interested in these events, it does sound like these experiences are subject to availability and reservations might be required. So if this is what you want to do while you have your reservation time in Star Wars Galaxy's Edge, make sure you head on over to those areas, or maybe, hopefully, my fingers are crossed for you that maybe they'll have online reservation system for these experiences, so you can reserve your time slot to be able to do these in the first few weeks and months of Star Wars Galaxy's Edge land opening.
Yeah, I feel like these will be something that's in the app like everything else.
I hope so.
Yeah. Well, the Orange County Register reported this week how some of the details were added to Galaxy's Edge. They relay the tale of how the R2-D2 tracks were made in the land. So we talked about this before, about that they were cast from the original molds, which you know, we talked about before, but... how did they do it? And I thought this story was hilarious.
I love it.
So they were made in the land by a construction worker sitting on a plywood base with the wheels on it, being pulled across the concrete by another construction worker.
How fun would that be?
So Teresa needs to be the droid concrete stamper person.
The official droid, the official concrete droid stamper track layer maker.
One of the things that they said, though, that's really cool is they say that there's so much detail, and we've talked about that numerous times, but they say if you follow the tracks, it'll lead you to, like, things that are happening. So apparently one of these sets of tracks,
they're not just randomly placed.
You end up in like an alleyway where there's some droids in a like in an oil bath, like chit-chatting with each other. So, like,
wow.
There's only the one attraction, right? Like the stereotypical, but there's so many other things to be doing. Mm-hmm. I'm just concerned that there's going to be so many people in this land that, like, even these, like, side things are going to be really crowded.
This Friday, May 24th, is the reopening of the centerpiece of Disneyland, the Sleeping Beauty Castle. Although the tarps have been removed and all that stands in the way of guests walking through her gates is a construction wall, Imagineers are still working on the final details. The castle returns just a week before the largest expansion in Disneyland's history, Galaxy's Edge, opens. We will talk a little bit more about this, but because this our discussion topic this week is, of course, the castle. But really, from what we have seen, from photos we've seen, from people's videos of them walking up Main Street with the castle in the background, I love it. I think it looks so, so good. I hope this paint holds up to the Southern California sun and that it doesn't fade very quickly, because I really like how vibrant this new castle is.
I know I've gone on record saying this before, but I'm going to reiterate. When the drawings first came out, I was skeptical, like really skeptical, based off the concept drawing. As we started to see pieces of it, like the blue roofs and the colored bricks, I was less skeptical. I loved the blue. I loved the popping of the blue. I said, this is going to be a fantastic. when I saw the bricks alone, like just in the little turrets or whatever, the little pieces, I was skeptical because I was like, that seems really bright. However, all together, I think it looks fantastic. I'm still skeptical about the pixie dust on the main part of the top of the castle there. But as Teresa, you were saying before the show, you don't think that in the grand scheme, you really it's going to stand out. It's because it was a zoomed in picture.
I wish I could erase that zoomed in picture from your mind and then see what your thought process was on it. Because honestly, I don't. I mean, it's there, but it's not noticeable to me.
Right.
So I wish we didn't know that it was there, and we probably wouldn't even notice that.
I will say it looks amazing, and I can't wait for it to be out from behind the walls and to see everybody's billions of pictures of it. And I can't wait when we're in there in August to walk through her through her gates, because as much as people rag on the castle because it's the smallest Disney castle, I love her.
We did also have another listener that was there this weekend. She was there on Sunday, and she's an annual pass holder. She goes to the park frequently, and I want to say just offhand, I think she's probably been to the park at least a handful of times yet this year,
sure,
if not more. She's goes very frequently. She said that when she entered and first saw the castle, she just stopped in her tracks and was just in awe. She said it looks so, so great, and it just pops so much better at the end of Main Street than the castle.
Well, from the videos we saw, it stands out. Before, it kind of blended in with like the sky with the color of the blue and stuff, but now it's there.
Yeah.
And I think that's good. Well, Disney has officially announced, calm down, Teresa. Disney has officially announced an after-hours event to celebrate the Haunted Mansion's 50th anniversary. There'll be two nights that you can celebrate with the Happy Haunts, August 7th and 8th. Tickets are $299 per person and go on sale this Thursday, May 23rd at 10 a.m. Pacific time.
If I had a teleporter, bam, I'd be no problem.
Okay, so there's some important details here for people to know. So unlike previous events, each person can only buy one ticket per transaction.
Mm-hmm. Per day.
One of the reasons is because they're trying to limit people's ability to buy the limited edition merchandise that's going to be available as part of this event and resell it online, which it's kind of a shame that they had to go through all these lengths for that. Oh, here,
that's what it's. One ticket per person, per event date, per transaction.
Yeah. Well, I don't know how many tickets you would buy necessarily. I mean, they're fairly pricey. But yes, I understand what they're doing. But I will let you talk about this, Teresa, because you are so excited about it.
I'm crazy excited about this. So to me, like we were saying before, Tag thinks the lightsaber price point, that makes sense to him. For me, a lot of people think this is steep, but I love the Haunted Mansion.
I believe words were, the Haunted Mansion only turns 50 once.
Exactly. This is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for me in my eyes. So, but some of the event highlights, there are so many cool things that they're doing with this. First of all, guests are going to be welcome to the event by none other than Madame Leota. She's going to make a special appearance to conjure up the party festivities. They're also going to have, you're going to be able to mix and mingle with some of the dearly departed souls that you love and have come to know through the attraction. So they're going to have actual meet and greets with different characters from the attractions. I could meet the Hatbox Ghost. How cool is that? But anyways, of course, there's going to be different food. Lots and lots and lots of merch is already being released online. They're not releasing it for you to purchase yet, but they're releasing what will be available after hours access to different attractions. Of course, they want you to dress in your cadaverous best. But yeah, I'm excited. The thing that's also very cool is this event is an after hours event, so it actually happens at night, which Tag and I both agree that is just such a magical time to experience the resort.
I think that you're leaving out the most important part. It's happening on the 13th hour, so it's from 1 a.m.
to
4
a.m.
to 4 a.m. And a lot of the West Side attractions are going to be open, so Critter Country, Frontierland,
Adventureland, Big Thunder Mountain, the Riverboat, Indiana Jones, Splash Mountain. Of course, I'm sure the Haunted Mansion would be open. It'd be kind of weird if it wasn't.
Right.
Pirates, I've heard Pirates will probably be open too.
Well, if all the spirits are out mingling with you, maybe the mansion will
be
closed.
That's true, it'd be empty.
I don't know. You're so excited about the ghosts. I'm worried that they're going to have to get a restraining order from you.
Nope. I just will hug them to death.
There you go.
To their second death.
It is super cool. We have not been able to, and I only bring him up because I know how much of a Haunted Mansion fan he is, but one of our listeners, Alex, is just as excited and as enthusiastic.
I'm sure he is.
As Teresa is. But we have not been able to talk to him since this news broke. So, Alex, if you're listening, let us know.
Well, the Disney Legends Awards ceremony is just one of the exciting events happening at the D23 Expo. This year's Legends were announced this past week. The 11 inductees are Wing Chow, Robert Downey Jr., John Favreau, James Earl Jones, Bette Midler, Kenny Ortega, Barnett Ritchie, Robin Roberts, Diane Sawyer, Ming-Na Wen, and Hans Zimmer. They will all be honored for their remarkable contributions to the Disney legacy. The Legends Awards ceremony will be held at 10:30 a.m. on Friday, August 23rd in Hall D23 of the Anaheim Convention Center. And this will be hosted by none other than Disney Chairman and CEO Bob Iger.
Okay, so the more I hear about this, the more I feel like you and I are both going to be in a tent waiting outside to get into this.
We're going to pause here because when I first saw this, I'm geeking out, freaking out. Tag and I were actually working together that day. I'm like, tag. And he's like, you're nuts. You're going to be, you really want to do that? Like, he thought I was crazy. I'm like, but this person and that person and Mufasa is going to be there and Iron Man and even more exciting, Barnett Ritchie. We just talked about her. She's the lady that we have to thank Fantasmic for. Plus, Winifred Sanderson.
Okay. So
I'm geeking out, and he thinks I'm nuts.
The more I think about it, the more I feel like it'd be so cool to be in the room with Robert Downey Jr., obviously Iron Man.
Yes.
John Favreau, who's been doing a lot of Star Wars stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Iconic James Earl Jones. Yes. I mean, he's the voice of Darth Vader and Mufasa.
Oh, yes, I forgot about Darth Vader. Yep, Mufasa.
Bette Midler, you're absolutely right.
Winifred
Sanderson. Kenny Ortega from the High School Musical. Mm-hmm. And what was the other? He also did Hocus Pocus. Barnett Ritchie, I know you're very excited for that. Fantasmic, of course.
Yeah.
Hans Zimmer, known for, you know, all of his composing and stuff. So, and now I did not know until I just read this story, because you wrote it, Bob Iger. I'm very excited.
Bob Iger. Yes, very, very, very excited.
We're going to explode when we go to D23,
and this is just the first event.
Yeah, it's literally the first event on the first day.
Yep.
We'll start.
So it's a good thing we're getting there a day early, because we will have to be camping out far in advance.
Definitely. Well, starting on May 31st, Steakhouse 55 in the Disneyland Hotel will be offering a Very Merry Unbirthday Tea Party. There'll be three variations of the tea party, ranging from the classic tea party at $52 for adults that includes scones, sandwiches, desserts, and teas, and herbal infusions, or the premium tea party for $65 per adult. You get wine, salad, and a farewell truffle added to the menu. Kids cost $39 and includes a classic tea party items plus juices, milk, or hot chocolate. The parties are available Friday through Sunday, noon to 3 p.m.
Can we talk about the photos that they have included of the food? This, it's so adorable. The sandwiches are cut, like one looks like it's like a rabbit's head with a clock painted on it. And this is the, these are sandwiches. It's like bread. And then one is cut in a square and it looks like a playing card.
Yep.
Just so adorable. They have chocolate dipped strawberries. One's themed to Tweedledee and Tweedledum. One looks like the, themed to the Cheshire Cat. There's a little, I don't know what it is. It's adorable.
It looks like pudding that's like a cup of tea.
Yes, it's like this edible cup with pudding or something in it. There's a little truffle mushroom looking thing. And then, of course, there's a macaron in the back that looks like a pocket watch. They're too cute to eat.
Right. Yeah. I can see this showing up. That's what I don't like about like some fancy foods is you look at it and you're like, I don't know if I want to eat this.
Yeah, I feel bad eating it. It's so somebody went through a lot of trouble to make it look this nice.
Right.
But very cute.
I never thought I would say that about sandwiches, though.
Right. Cute sandwiches.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have thought I would say that either. But I think a lot of people are going to be very excited about this. It's very cute and it's very unique. Well, starting May 25th, brunch will be offered from 8:30 to noon at the Lamplight Lounge in Disney California Adventure. The brunch will be available on Saturdays and Sundays only at this point. No menu has been announced as of the recording of this episode. I think that's great. I'm trying to think off the top of my head. I'm not a big breakfast person, personally.
Well, that's
why
it's brunch,
where
right?
Where else can you get breakfast even in Disney? Is there a sit-down restaurant that you can even get breakfast at Disney California Adventure? mean, there's the classic places, of course, over in Disneyland.
Yeah, I guess I'm never over in California Adventure in the morning. I always hit Disneyland up in the morning.
There's nothing that I can think of off the top of my head, but again, this is coming from somebody that's not a big breakfast person. Yeah. I'm kind of a coffee and go type gal. Mm-hmm. So I think this is great. I think it's something, you know, another reason to experience the Lamplight Lounge, you know, maybe if dinner isn't your thing, or if you have reservations somewhere else to enjoy your dinner at a different location, this is still a way to be able to experience the Lamplight Lounge. So I like it. I think it's great. I can't wait to see what the menu is going to be and what the pricing is going to be for this as well.
Well, on May 24th, a preview of Toy Story 4 will be coming to the Tomorrowland Theater. Again, I think they're trying to just use every available space anywhere in the park to eat up people for Galaxy's Edge. Although I did see, I guess I was late because Teresa had seen it. I did see the latest trailer for Toy Story 4, and I did giggle quite a bit at the end.
You know, when they first announced that they were doing another Toy Story, I groaned. I was just like, oh, God.
Well, they ended it so well in 3.
Well, and it's just been, it's been so long, and don't get me wrong, I loved the first one. Wasn't that big of a fan of the second one. The third one was okay. But still, if they just did the first one, I would have been perfectly happy. Mm. But that's me. So,
but then you missed out on the second one, which is probably my favorite Toy Story.
Yes, yes. But I'm okay with that, because I thought the first one was awesome. Yeah. So to me, sometimes I get a little, I don't know, I'm not as excited for sequels or even prequels of things. You know, sometimes it's just
so overdone.
New stuff, right? I like new stuff. So when they first announced this, I wasn't excited. But the trailers they've released, it actually seems like it's going to be pretty entertaining. I don't know if I'm going to be standing in line to go see it opening night by any means.
Right.
But I won't not see it.
I didn't, the very first like teaser trailer for it, I was like, what the heck is this spork doing in here? And now I'm kind of
when
like,
they're playing,
okay,
like, I don't know, Ring Around the Rosie or something.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'm interested to see what'll Sporky. Come of it. I'm with you, though. I don't think it'll be like an opening night thing for me.
Federal engineers are worried that the Prado Dam, that is empty almost most all of the year, except if there's heavy rain, could fail if water spilled over the top. Well, if this happened, it is possible that Disneyland, along with much of Anaheim, could be flooded. This dam is almost 80 years old.
They're not saying that it's just going to have
not
a breach now.
Well, and they're not saying like that it's going to happen tomorrow or anything. It's just, it's getting old.
Right. So they've talked about how there were similar dams that were like this that have failed or have already been listed as dangerous. So it was the LA Times that reported this, and I thought it was interesting because, of course, there's a lot more in that area that would flood.
Oh, yeah.
But I think the eye-catching thing that they wanted to get people like, oh, to like read the article is the fact that they said Disneyland.
Yeah.
Because the exact headline is, engineers up failure risk for dam protecting Disneyland, comma, dozens of Orange County cities. So I think that it was kind of a shock factor. But I didn't even know that that would be an issue, that there
it
was a dam anywhere.
It seems like it's pretty far away when you look at the map in the article. So, but, you know, you never know.
Yeah. I mean, flooding, we've had a lot of flooding in the Midwest. So it's not anything to balk at. So hopefully they get some funding and can shore it up and we don't ever have to worry about Disneyland flooding.
Well, now we're going to take a trip over to Trivia Land, where producer James tries to stump us with some Disney trivia. He's going to read us a question. We're going to attempt to answer them. And then James will give us the correct answers after the discussion topic. So what do you have for us this week?
Well, this week we're going to start our adventure in Fantasyland, courtesy of listener Elizabeth Kay.
Oh,
thank you, Elizabeth.
Her question is, what character was added to the Snow White's Scary Adventures attraction during the 1983 remake?
Oh, boom. I think I got it. This is a great question.
Oh, I think it was Snow White.
It is. Yep,
because people
Snow
were
White.
Confused why she wasn't in her own attraction.
Correct.
We'll find out, I guess. But
correct.
You were also
that's
saying
what
Snow
I'm
White?
Saying.
Correct as in you're either riding together or failing together.
Yes.
Question
we're in the same mind train together.
Yeah, there you go. Question number 2. As you stroll through California Adventure, you might be able to hear some orchestral arrangements of songs by a famous California band. Which band?
The Pixharmonic Orchestra.
The Beach Boys? I think it's the Beach Boys.
Oh, that's a better answer.
What are you saying?
Well, not the Pixar Orchestra. However, they are fabulous, and they should be famous throughout all of California.
So what are you saying?
Well, I want to jump on the Beach Boys train because I think you have a good answer, okay. But that's cheating. But it's, I'm going to do it anyways.
James should tell you what he told.
Well, either
what
sink
he told,
or swim together.
He yeah. should tell you what he told Terry last night.
You're TNT. It can't be TNT without the other one. So
no, that's not what you told.
I told Terry. Well, on Mouse Kingdoms, I told Terry, well, sometimes you just got to listen to your gut, and sometimes your gut tells you to listen to Tay.
Well, that's one thing he said, but I was going for him saying that if somebody has the right answer and you agree with them, that's not a bad thing.
That's true. But I feel like it's cheating, because if you wouldn't have said it, I don't know if I would have come to that answer.
Well, sometimes you say things and I hop on that bandwagon
that's
too.
That's true.
I've learned with the trivia lately with both shows that I listen to others before I make a decision, because before I would be like, bam, and then I'd be wrong. So
we'll find out if that's working out for you or not.
We'll find out.
All right, our third question this week. What Tomorrowland attraction was the first ever attraction to be removed from Disneyland in California?
Like the from opening day, like that was removed?
It was just the first attraction that was removed. Doesn't necessarily have to be an opening day attraction.
I'm going to say the house of the future.
I'm going to say the Viewliner. Because the monorail ended up going there. The monorail was 1959, so it couldn't have been that long. So, Viewliner.
Ooh, you're probably right.
Fun, challenging history question for you. All right, and our last question for this week, which comes from listener Lisa G. The Oogie Boogie character who appears with his roulette wheel at near the end of the Haunted Mansion is a reskinned version of a previously used animatronic from a different attraction.
I
laugh because Teresa's throwing her hands up.
Wait a minute. How do you not know its name but know the answer?
I'll explain later. Do you want to take a jab at it first?
Yes. I feel like it's... Is it another one from America Sings? I'm going to say, what, attraction?
No, I want to know which character.
Oh.
Okay, we're going to team up on this because you probably know the character name.
I can't give Teresa okay. that much joy.
So what?
Country Bear Jamboree. It was one of the bears from Country Bear Jamboree.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. He was a big, I want to say brown
bear. Was it Rufus?
Big, or no, was that one bear, of the... Like, big. He was like the big fat one in the back. I don't know how else
I feel
to
like,
describe
I feel like Rufus is one of the like things on the wall, one of the moose heads.
attraction that well to know. But he had like big giant bear with a tiny little like banjo or something.
Yeah, I know. Like, in my mind, I see him. Mm-hmm. I just don't remember his name.
I have no idea what his name is.
Because the only thing I remember from Country Bear Jamboree to this day is they say, well, it was the Vacation Hoedown, and they sing the, thank God I'm a country bear. And then they do like On the Road Again. Anyway.
Yeah.
That's almost
they sing songs, of course. Yes.
So you're going to say fat country bear.
With the little guitar /banjo/ukulele.
And I didn't know that. So I'm just going to go with my America Sings, which I know is wrong, but I feel like is, to be honest with the trivia, I feel like I should say America Sings, because that's what I would have said.
This has been glorious, because your description of the bear got you so close. But you'll have to wait until after the discussion topic to find
like
out just
big
how
something.
Close.
Yeah, probably like Little John or something like that. Little Mo, or I don't know. Well, in honor of our wonderful castle coming back this week, we decided that it would be a fun idea to talk about the history of the Sleeping Beauty Castle at Disneyland.
Not to mention the fact that it was on our suggestions topic list on the website. So we picked it even
Perfect.
Early.
Yes. Good timing. Let's start at the beginning. Let's start a little bit before the beginning. So,
okay.
As you guys all know, I'm just going to throw this out there. I feel like most people probably know this.
I hope so.
The castle opened, of course, in July of 1955. It opened with the park. Technically, it depends on what day you want to say. It said July 17th is when it opened, July 17th, 1955. And it is the oldest of all the Disney castles, which
makes sense
since it is in the original park. We're going to go back before that, before we even get to the castle, the opening. How did it come to be? Where did they get this idea to have the Sleeping Beauty Castle? One thing I think that is super interesting about this is the movie Sleeping Beauty did not come out until after the castle had made its debut at the park. I find that very mind-boggling. The other interesting thing, too.
Can you imagine going to the park and you're like, this is Sleeping Beauty Castle, and you're like, that's not any of the Disney anything yet.
Yeah, she was not an official Disney princess quite yet. The other interesting thing, too, and we can kind of get into it a little bit later, but I never really thought about it, but if you watch the movie Sleeping Beauty and you take a look at the castle that they have represented in the movie, it looks really nothing like the castle that we have at Disneyland. So that's just kind of another little interesting thing. I guess it looks similar.
The main tower looks similar, but that's about it.
So anyway, so back when they were first planning the idea, of course, you know, Walt is into doing all the fairy tales thing, and that's why he decided he wanted a castle. But he brought in scenic designer Marvin Davis, and Davis had his future wife, Marjorie, who actually, fun fact, they actually met during this project. But Marjorie researched different castles around the world. So after viewing castles in Spain, France, and other countries, they found inspiration from, I'm going to apologize up front, but it's the Neuschwanstein Castle in Germany. And producer James has actually visited this castle.
Yeah, and I got to tell you, the castle is a little bit more beautiful in Germany than it is in the park.
A little different, huh?
Yeah, just a little bit different. A little bit different. Amazing to go through. Absolutely worth the trip.
Imagineering artist Herb Ryman created the first concept illustration of the castle. And actually, he is really well known for like one of the most valuable artifacts in the Walt Disney Archives, which is the
it's the first illustrations of the vision for the theme park that eventually became Disneyland.
Right, that they used to sell investors to invest in Disneyland. And of course, the castle that's in that picture does not look anything like the castle we know today. Along with the drawing that Herb Ryman did, and of course everybody sold on Disneyland and everything like that, they ended up using, when they built the castle, and this has been used quite a bit recently with the refurbishment we just talked about.
Even.
Yep. To make it appear taller, that it's only 77 feet tall, which is amazing to me because it does seem bigger, even if you're standing right next to it. They used forced perspective, which is basically making things seem bigger at the bottom and smaller at the top, so it seems like it's a lot taller than it is.
Yeah, so for instance, the windows at ground level are correct size, but then they are smaller and smaller the higher up you go in the castle.
Yeah, so it tricks the eye into thinking that things are further away, creating the illusion of a taller or larger building. This was used in movies. It's used all down Main Street. I think it's actually used throughout the entire park to make everything seem a lot bigger than it is. So even though it is the smallest castle, it still does seem big.
So I found this very interesting, and I felt it was, the more I learn about Walt Disney and him building this park, Disneyland, it seems like it was like beautiful chaos at times, I guess was a good way of saying it. So details were added to the castle project as it was being built. Walt actually wanted the spires to be covered in 22-karat gold leaf. So obviously this is kind of a well-known rumor, but he knew that his brother Roy would not approve because that would be quite an extra expense. So as the rumor goes, Walt sent Roy off on a business trip. And while Roy was away, Walt authorized for the 22 karat gold leaf to be added to the castle. I think that's so funny that
and it looks amazing.
It does.
So
it looks so, so nice. And like we were talking about before, the updated version of it, they redid the gold on the castle and it just looks so beautiful. And I think it's a nice touch, even with the pixie dust. I think it's going to, the little extra like glimmers in the sun is just going to make it look that much more magical.
Yes, definitely. And you know, it's one of those things, you know, Roy was definitely holding the purse strings on everything. So Walt was always trying to get like little extra things over on him and stuff. And this is definitely one of those things. So I'm glad that he was able to, and I think it did add that little bit of, like, regalness to the castle, you know, having that little bit of gold on there. So.
I would love to know what the explanation was when Roy came back and saw the gold on the castle and Walt would be like, oh, I don't know. I don't know how that got up there.
Or did he even notice? You know, it's one of those things.
Yeah, maybe. They had so many other things going on, he may not have noticed it right away.
The drawbridge that everybody walks over, it's not really functional today because of the way that they've done everything, but it actually is a working drawbridge, and it's the only one at any of the Disney parks, which is super cool. Of mm-hmm. course, Walt would want a drawbridge.
Of course.
It's only been raised twice, once on opening day, which was during the opening day ceremony, which you could see online or if you have some of that old Disneyland stuff. Yep. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the reopening of Fantasyland after its major refurbishment in 1983. In addition to the drawbridge, landscaping around the moat and different water elements, including swans, which were really well known to be hanging around the castle for a long time, were included to further romanticize the castle. The Walt Disney Imagineering lined the moat with juniper since swans don't eat the plant.
I thought that was so funny. So instead of, like, having a fence to keep the swans in, they had juniper to kind of
corral them
a little. Plus, then they didn't have to worry about the swans eating their landscaping right. since they didn't like the plant.
Now, this next fact that you have here, I did not know this. I thought it was always a part of the castle.
Yeah, well, you can go ahead and talk about it.
Well, in 1965, the Disney family coat of arms was hung above the castle archway. It features three lions passant, or lions that appear as if they're walking or taking steps.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I knew that their family crest was there, their coat of arms was there, but I did not know that it was added in 1965. And with this latest refurbishment, I think they've really glitzed it up. It's definitely, I think, a little brighter gold.
Sure. Now, this was really interesting to me. And, you know, the castle history is fascinating. But I thought we'd take a little bit of time and talk about the walkthrough, because the castle is technically an attraction. But the castle initially was very empty inside, and it was not intended to ever be an attraction or to house anything. But Walt was not satisfied with what he viewed as was really wasted space. So he challenged his Imagineers to find some use for the space. So April 29th, 1957, the space was opened for guests to walk through and filled with dioramas representing the story of Sleeping Beauty. Walt invited actress Shirley Temple to be a part of the walkthrough's opening ceremony.
Shirley Temple was a part of quite a few things back in the day when she was in the height of her.
It was interesting because she was a very popular child mm-hmm. star, but, you know, she really didn't do anything specifically for Disney. She never was a Disney actress that I know of. I could be completely wrong, mm-hmm. but... So I thought that was kind of neat. So she was an adult when she was a part of the opening ceremony. So it was interesting. I found some old pictures of Walt and Shirley kind of cutting the ribbon to the castle. So I didn't even recognize that it was her because, like I said, she was an adult.
Right. What a great use of space, too. I mean, this kind of shows, I mean, we've talked about numerous times on the show about how, you know, things like the Haunted Mansion or Indiana Jones, how they, you know, they have to work within the confines of different things. And this, when there was still plenty of land around Disneyland in the park that they could be filling, they picked something like the castle that had wasted mm-hmm. space and utilized that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, parks that have been built since then, they actually put stuff in there. Like Disney World has a restaurant inside their castle. It's cool that they were able to utilize. It's not very big. We already said it's only 77 feet tall. There's not much room in there. Although I will say, when going through the Sleeping Beauty castle walkthrough, diorama walkthrough, mm-hmm. it does feel pretty big in there.
It does. It does. Yeah. No, they did a really good job with the layout of how, you know, I feel like you feel like you're walking through the entire castle, but you're really only going through one little itty bitty tiny part of
right.
it. So anyways, back to the dioramas. The original dioramas were designed in the style of Edwin Earle, which I'm sorry if I butchered the name, but he was a production designer for the 1959 Sleeping Beauty movie. They were redone in 1977 to more resemble what the Main Street window displays looked like. However, on July 17th, 2008, Disney announced that they would be redoing the walkthrough once again, and this time they were going to go back to the style of the old Earl dioramas, but also include new technology to help make them more magical. And so those are the dioramas that we can see today.
Well, from right after 9/11 until that diorama reopened, it was closed because There's some conflicting rumors.
Yeah.
They said that it was because they were worried about terrorism and stuff, which could be the case. But I also feel like they kind of just, this was kind of a dark era for the park, and they were closing a lot of things and doing a lot of cost cutting measures. And I think it was more that than terrorism. But I'm glad that they've reopened it, and it is a great, cute little thing that you can do in there.
The other cool thing, too, is with the 2008 rework of the interior of the Sleeping Beauty Castle, they did also make it so that, I mean, because if, if you've gone through the walkthrough, you have to go up and down a lot of steps.
Right.
It's not
cramped.
It's cramped. You know, it's not easily accessible. So they did actually create a separate viewing area. Mm-hmm. So if perhaps you're in a wheelchair or maybe crutches, or you just don't do well in cramped spaces, you can still enjoy the dioramas from this separate area.
I love that Disney's done stuff like this. They did the same, similar kind of thing with the submarine voyage. So, because I was around about the same time, so that was a good double use of that kind of a thing.
Yes, definitely.
Well, at the rear of the castle, this one is interesting, because I thought for the long time the incorrect thing as well.
James will have to remind us, but I feel like we had this as a trivia question, and we both failed.
Maybe. So at the rear of the castle, behind the shaded archways and driven into the ground is a gold spike that is widely but wrongly believed to mark the geographical center of Disneyland as of the addition of Mickey's Toontown in 1993. In reality, it's just a surveyor's mark that was used to ensure that the castle bridge and entrance lined up with Main Street USA when the park was first constructed. The original geographic center of the Magic Kingdom was in the middle of the round park where the partner statue of Walt and Mickey stands. The addition of Toontown moved the actual center of the park a few yards northward, but still on the hub side of the castle drawbridge.
It's crazy to me, and I totally get why this is such a very confusing thing for people, because why would they, I mean, I don't know much about surveyors, but why is it a fancy gold-colored spike that you can still see today? So that's, I think that's why it's confusing, because it was such a very prominent and permanent stake that they used for this. It sounds like a very kind of a temporary use,
right?
I guess would be a good way of saying it.
Yeah, because once you line it up with Main Street, it's not like you're going to need it to line up with Main Street again.
I mean, I can see, you know, throughout the construction process, but then, you know, either pulling it up or covering it or whatever, you know, moving on. So it's interesting to me that it's still there, but then also kind of flashy since it's gold. So I thought that was a good, we need to clear that up, because that is a very, very confusing thing for a lot of people.
So now that we've talked about the past, let's talk about, I mean, there's still a little bit of the past, but let's talk about the person who's responsible for, I would say, being the caretaker of the castle over the last few decades.
Kim Irvine. So we've talked about her before. So I kind of started researching her more myself when we first were talking about the castle getting its current paint job and that this was going to be happening. You know, you kind of, I don't know, it's like this big, precious, very special thing. So as soon as they said this was happening, I needed to like learn about the person that was in charge of it.
Sure.
I had this very weird thing that I had to learn more about her. And as soon as I did, I instantly trusted what she was going to be doing. I feel like, and I said this before, I feel like we need to have a discussion topic devoted to this woman.
Sure.
She has such a large history with Disney, with Disneyland, the park,
right,
and just such a huge contribution to what the park is today. She is, as you all know, she is still an Imagineer. She's been an Imagineer for a very long time. Her mother was Leota Toombs, which she was a very famous Imagineer as well, but most of us would probably recognize her as the voice and the face of Madame Leota in the Haunted Mansion.
Right.
And actually, Kim Irvine, I think we talked about this before too, is the voice and face for the holiday version of Madame Leota in the Haunted Mansion. But anyways, so I had to research her because I was very worried about, you know, who is going to be in charge of this. And so from day one, I felt a little bit more at ease when I learned that it was her. And I really think she did a great job. But this is the sixth castle refurbishment that she has been a part of. But this is the most important one that she has been a part of. She purposely was emphasizing bright pink and darker blues. Basically, I thought this was very cool, an illustration of Sleeping Beauty that the artists Edvin Earl, who is the guy that name's going to sound familiar because right. he's the one that the dioramas, that was his styling, was kind of sprung to life. And they also wanted to make sure that the original designs from Ryman popped. So they were trying to make it an animation-friendly color palette, which I think is great because one of the things I said to Tag was that it looks almost like you plucked it out of a story tale and it's like a real-life
right?
story tale. Yeah. That's exactly what they designed it to do. But it's basically, it's Kim Irvine's statement piece, and it's basically a reiteration that Disneyland must remain a place where fairy tales can flourish. So they don't want to, since we're having Star Wars Galaxy's Edge open and we have Marvel Land open, we have a lot of kind of non-traditional Disney things happening in the park right yep. now. It is very important that the castle kind of doesn't get forgotten and that it remains a statement piece because that's where it all
well,
began.
And if this makes anybody feel any better... which it did to me, actually. In the article that the LA Times had with her about the castle, she actually has been overseeing the Project Stardust project.
All of it.
Mm-hmm. So she has been very involved with this to make sure that even though a lot of people online have been like, oh, this is terrible, you're getting rid of shade and whatever. In the article, they have not gotten rid of any trees. Like, that was something that she said, that they, mm-hmm. we have not gotten rid of any trees. We've trimmed back some things. We've moved some things. We've gotten rid of some, like, bushes maybe a little bit. But there's not any less shade or anything in the parks. They're just trying to make it more comfortable for everybody. And she's very attention to detail. It's funny because in the article she says that she could talk about which specific brick needs to be which color and why to maintain the illusion of height, which, like, that alone is just nuts that she knows all that. But she wanted the tops of the towers to match the cobalt blue seen in the animated intro that precedes the Disney film. So that thing you see that says Disney at the beginning. And mm-hmm. she mm-hmm. said that it started out very tan and beige. And John Hench actually used to walk by it. And he would say, we got to fix that color scheme. And architect did the color scheme. It'd be so much more, you know, colorful and bright. And I think that it did. My question is, with all of this, is why did it take so long to change the color scheme? If they've been talking about it for years and years, why didn't they do this, you know, when she was first doing these type of projects? Because she's overseen six different mm-hmm. Castle refurbishments. How come this didn't happen on her first or second
one? I'm sure there's various different reasons that they didn't decide to go this route sooner. But this also kind of made me feel a little bit better, too. So she even said in this interview that the castle has been keeping her up at night. She's very stressed and very worried about the castle.
Oh, yeah.
Largely because she didn't fully comprehend on what it was going to look like and how well it would work as you walked up and down Main Street until the scrims came off. However, her coworkers aren't concerned, but I think it is a very good sign that she was very concerned and very aware of this throughout the whole process.
Yeah. Yeah. And this, to kind of wrap up, sum up in like one or two sentences, I think this is really touching that her coworkers would say this. So Michael Dobzrecki, who works with Kim on the art direction of the park, said, "The castle now looks like Kim to me. Most guests will enjoy this version of the castle without realizing that they are seeing the work of a world-class color artist at the top of her game." That's amazing. That just mm-hmm. makes me so happy for her mm-hmm. because obviously she's dedicated so much of her life to the Disney company and the Disneyland.
Mm-hmm. Well, and she grew up with Disney and with Disneyland.
Yeah. You know, and to have
it's part of her.
Somebody who works with her, you know, say these great things. I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah. I do feel this. She just, the more I learn about Kim, the more incredible I think she is. So I do think that one of these days we will have an episode devoted to Kim and kind of what her contributions to the park have been. Because it's actually been It's incredible. There's a little bit of the scratching of the surface that I've done. It's just mm-hmm. like, oh, wow, you know.
Well, it just goes to show that there are so, well, a couple things. It goes to show that, one, behind everything that happens, it's not, you know, a lot of times we say, you know, it's Disney magic and pixie dust and whatever. Mm-hmm. But behind every single thing that happens at the park, there is somebody behind it.
Yes.
And it's amazing that as we do this show and as we research different things like this, that we learn more and more about all these different people that come together to make it what it is. You know, we've talked in the past, you know, when we talked about the World's Fair and with It's a Small World, how Mary Blair was such a big part. Mm-hmm. We've talked about with Pirates of the Caribbean, how Mark Davis and the Haunted Mansion, how Mark Davis, Paul Frees, how all these people had all of these touches around the park. And now Kim Irvine, in a modern sense, the castle is Kim Irvine, where you say like Mary Blair is a small world and Mark Davis is the Haunted Mansion and Pirates. So super awesome that that people are known and recognized for this and they do such a great job. And it's not known for, I mean, nobody knows, if you go the opposite direction, nobody knows, you can't point to the new Tomorrowland of 1998. Nobody knows who did that awful mess. Yes. So, well, that does it for our discussion topic this week. Hopefully, you guys learned a lot. We certainly learned a lot about the castle. I mean, as something so iconic, you'd think that a lot of this stuff would be more known, but it's not, because we just kind of walk by it and it's, you know, it's there, I guess. There's not like a huge detailed history. We did get an email this last week.
Oh, this is such a cool email.
It is a cool email. So Kelsey emailed in about our discussion on the 1964-65 World's Fair and said, first, I'm a big fan of the podcast. Thank you so much for making it. Well, you're welcome. We do enjoy making it. I'm a little behind in the episodes, but I loved your one on the 1964-65 World's Fair. You had made a call out for all those who had attended the fair and wanted to know their experience. So I was born in 1985, so clearly I did not attend the fair, but I have a pretty neat and unique World's Fair experience still. I worked on the Disney movie Tomorrowland as it was filmed up in Vancouver, Canada. It's not everyone's favorite movie, which I think, what did you think, Teresa? You actually did go watch it.
Yep, we'll talk. We can talk about it once we go through this.
Okay, but I'm so thankful for the experience. If you've seen the movie, I'm sure you recall the characters attended the 1964-65 World's Fair, specifically outside and inside of It's a Small World. I recall my very first day on set, I stepped out of the SUV and into a magical experience. For the filming, they had recreated a large portion of the exterior of It's a Small World and the World's Fair. 300 extras in 60s clothing, portions of the exterior of the ride, blue screen for some parts, ticket booths, the music was playing, and even the Disney characters were present in the same costumes they wore in the 1960s. I was transported back in time. I felt like I was actually there in this magical land. I'm not going to lie, I shed a few tears over the 2 days of filming this location. I wish I could have snapped a million photos, but alas, my contract prevented me from doing that. But I think back to the magical time whenever I ride It's a Small World today.
So I, before receiving this email, I had actually had forgotten about the movie Tomorrowland. I apologize, Kelsey, but I had forgotten about that movie and I had actually never seen it. So I had just happened to have a half day of work that when I read your email and I said, I'm going to go home and I'm going to watch Tomorrowland because I was so excited to hear that you had this experience that you got to feel like you were transported back in time and got to experience a little bit of what the World's Fair could have been like in 1964-1965. So we'll start this way. The movie in general, honestly, my big takeaway from the movie was the scenes of the 1964 World's Fair, because if I could be transported back in time, I would want to go there. So that I was so captivated, and I kept pausing it and rewinding it and kept rewatching. It's not that many scenes of the movie, but it is in the beginning. So if you are interested, it is right in the beginning. So if you don't want to watch the full movie, you can look at the sneak peek of the back in time version of the 64 World's Fair. It was very well done. I was really impressed with the amount of detail that went into it. I mean, we've looked at so many different pictures from when we were doing the podcast regarding the world's, you know, the 64, 65 World's Fair. So I've seen lots of photos and this looked, I mean, it looked like it was spot on. So I think they just did a fantastic job. I was also very impressed because they did ride It's a Small World in this in the movie. And of course, they would have had to film that at Disneyland because where else do you get It's a Small World? And there were parts of it that I recognized, but then there are also parts of it, the boats that the characters were in were not the same boats that you would normally see it.
So attention to detail.
So the attention to detail was incredible. There were also different elements. Like I did not see any of the, I don't know how they filmed this without catching any of the animal topiaries that are on the outside, because the camera kind of followed them as they first went into the attraction. And then they were in the attraction for a little bit too. But yeah, so there was things. There was like this shade canopy thing that they had set up. There were different lighting fixtures than I had remembered. Mm. It was a very familiar sense, but it was also all the details of it were completely different. So I was very impressed with that.
I remember seeing...
It's a very unique concept of a movie. Yeah. Though. I will give it that. It was interesting. I don't know if it's one of my favorite movies, mm-hmm. but I didn't hate it. And I watched the whole thing till the end. So I didn't like get halfway through and say, no, not for me, you know? So I thought it was good, but truly the highlight for me was the first few scenes.
I remember watching it, a while ago, like when it came out. I think we might've even gone and seen it in the theater, 'cause it seemed like it was going to be pretty cool. And of course it was called Tomorrowland. And I vaguely remember, I have not watched it recently, but I vaguely remember the World's Fair scene. So, but I had forgotten, like you, I forgot that the movie even existed.
Totally geeking out during those scenes, just totally Disney geeking out during that. So Kelsey, thank you so much for emailing in and talking to us about your experience. Very cool. Very one of a kind. Yeah. And also thank you for reminding me of the movie so that I could go out and watch it and kind of, not in the same sense, experience those scenes as well. They were just very, very good. I was very impressed. If you want to have a voice in the podcast and our discussion topics, please head over to dlweekly.net/vote to register your choice for the next discussion topics. We've been getting a lot of great responses, including this week's topic about the Sleeping Beauty Castle. So please keep up the great suggestions for the future of the show.
Well, did you enjoy listening to this episode of DL Weekly? You can support the show for as little as 25 cents an episode. If you want access to the supporter chat like we always talk about, it's only 75 cents an episode. Please consider joining supporters like LEC and head over to dlweekly.net/support.
Well, now it's time to return to James over in Trivialand to get the answers to this week's trivia.
Should be a pretty good week for the two of you, I think.
Uh-oh.
We'll see.
Well, our first question this week came from listener Elizabeth Kay, and she asked, what character was added to the Snow White's Scary Adventures attraction during the 1983 remake?
Well, first of all, thank you, Elizabeth Kay, for sending in the question. We always like getting listener trivia questions. I feel like sometimes you guys are nicer to us, sometimes you're not.
It's a good balance.
But it makes it so James can't take all of the credit for stumping us. I said Snow White.
And I agreed with Snow White.
And you're both correct. It is definitely Snow White. And like you were saying during the trivia segment in the past, you were supposed to be seeing the attraction as Snow White. So the guest was taking on the role, but people kept getting confused.
Because that was a lot of the dark rides, mm-hmm. wasn't it?
Peter Pan was that way.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, so Elizabeth found this in the Imagineering Field Guide to Disneyland and gave a couple extras as well. So you can look forward to a few more questions like this in
Elizabeth?
The near future.
I just ordered that book today.
Oh, did you?
Yes, I did.
Well, that was
I'm going to have to study up.
Study
apparently.
Up, absolutely.
So she can make me look bad.
Good. I'm glad I have like somebody that we kind of know that apparently has their stamp of approval on
there
that
book.
There you go. So I'm even more excited now.
All right, question number two. As you stroll through California Adventure, you might be able to hear some orchestral arrangements of songs by a famous California band. Which band?
Beach Boys.
And I jumped on Tag's bandwagon. And
I wish
Beach Boys
they
as well.
All could be California boys. Sorry.
Slight modification. Yes, the Beach Boys is absolutely
What was
correct.
It supposed Ooh. To be?
California girls.
Girls, whatever.
I'm pretty sure it's girls, not boys.
Well, I was thinking, to be honest, you want to know what I was thinking? I was thinking of the Country Bears, where they say, I wish they could all could be California bears, because that was one
of
the things.
Yet.
I know, but that's what was in my head, and I couldn't remember the right lyric. So, in my defense.
All right, question number three. What Tomorrowland attraction was the first ever attraction to be removed from Disneyland in California?
This was my shot in the dark question. I said the House of the Future.
And I said Viewliner.
And the correct answer is the Phantom Boats, also known as the Tomorrowland Boats.
Oh!
They have very unreliable engines.
Yes.
I know that now
you
that
know
you say
what
that.
Year, when they opened and when they closed?
Well, they closed in August 1956, so it was less than a year.
Oh, yeah.
All right, and our last question from Lisa G and her interesting tidbit that she came across. The Oogie Boogie character who appears with his roulette wheel near the end of Haunted Mansion Holiday is a reskinned version of a previously used animatronic from a different attraction. Which character is it?
I said it was from America Sings, and I don't know what character, but I'm pretty sure that's wrong.
And I said, I didn't
the
know
fat
his name.
Country bear.
Yes, the big country bear that was in the back that had the tiny guitar of... the Country Bear Jamboree.
What's funny is when you say tiny guitar, I for some reason imagine like this really dinky guitar, but in comparison to him,
smallest violin.
Yeah, kind of.
Not quite that small. But yeah, it looks like a mini guitar, so maybe like a ukulele or something.
That's what I was picturing.
Yep.
Yeah, I just had to keep laughing because he kept saying big, 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 and I'm like, yeah, that's half the answer. It's Big Al from the Country Bear Jamboree.
See, I almost said Big Al, but we have a pizza place that was called Big Al, and I walked by it today, and I thought that it was like creeping into my mind. So does Teresa get a half point?
Yeah, yeah, she got the attraction right and was well on the way.
I'll give her a solid half. Very honest with you, with all the weekly tears listening out there. I think I've only ever experienced Country Bear Jamboree once at Disneyland and maybe once at Walt Disney World, and that is it. So I do not have much experience.
I loved the Country Bear Jamboree.
Those Country Bears.
A vacation hoedown.
I clearly have found the weak spot in your trivia knowledge. So, well, like this week, it was a lot more fun asking the listener questions than mine. So if you want to submit them to me, my email is trivia@dlweekly.net, and you can hear your name and question asked on air.
Yes, great question. So thank you again to
Elizabeth K. and Lisa G.
Thank you, guys. Well, we will be back next week with more Disneyland news and information.
So until then, go out and enjoy the parks.
Ladies and gentlemen, Disneyland has now ended its normal operating day. We hope you've enjoyed your visit to the Magic Kingdom and that you'll be back with us again soon.